Looks to get it in. They get it to Boyd. Boyd gets it to Kyer. Kyer with three to Livingston. Long desperation three. It's good!
Hey 10, hey 10, hey 10. GiantKiller.co and the By George Podcasting Network present an Atlantic 10 original. The Hey 10 Podcast featuring Petey Buckets and Grant LeBenz.
Tosses it in and it's over. Davidson is going to the dance. They win the Atlantic 10 Tournament Championship.
And welcome back to a very special edition of the Hey 10 Podcast. I'm here with my buddy Grant LeBenz. We've got a lot to talk about tonight. First, the A-10 tourney is now finished. We have St. Louis and VCU going to the NCAA tournament. So we're going to start with a wrap of the A-10 tourney, give you some of our thoughts on that, what happened. Then we're going to go through and discuss a little bit about St. Louis and VCU, the matchups they get in the NCAA tournament, what we think their chances are. And then we're going to leave you with some off-season developments. A ton has gone on in the days since the A-10 tourney has ended already. We're recording this on a Wednesday. Tournament ended on Sunday. We've already got coaches fired. We've got players transferring. We've got coaches returning, which can be just as controversial. So we're going to cover all that for you. Before we get into it, Grant, first of all, welcome back. And second of all, how were you able to consume the A-10 tournament since you weren't able to make it up to Brooklyn with us?
Hey, Petey. Bittersweet week, I feel like. A-10 play has come to an end, which is a bummer. But we've got my absolute favorite weekend of the year coming up, the opening round of the NCAA tournament. So I am stoked, despite having to watch the A-10 tournament from home on, the computer, whatever streams I could find. I actually didn't realize that CBS was streaming the game online for free. So I was able to watch that and the rest of the games I had through TV provider and whatnot. So I got to catch most of it. Obviously not as good as being there in person, but my weekend was also spent making sure I got every little bit of work done that I could before Thursday and Friday, because these next 2 days I'm doing absolutely nothing but watching basketball all day, all night, and it's going to be fun. But I got to ask you, how was the A-10 tournament? You were there in Brooklyn. You met a couple of our guys on A-10 Talk. I'm sure you met a lot of the other guys on A-10 Twitter. What was it like?
The A-10 tournament was great, man. I love Barclays, first of all. I think Brooklyn's a great location for it. I know people grumble about it, but and I know it's not easy for everybody, but if you got the money and if you can take the time off of work, it's really a fantastic location for it. And also, if it's easy enough for you to get there. I'm in D.C. I know a bunch of people who were going, so it was easy enough to drive there, split an Airbnb. We're media, so we don't have to pay for the tickets. So, Brooklyn is super fun. It's an awesome spot. So, you go watch basketball in one of the coolest arenas in the United States, and then afterwards you just run around a really fun city, we had a great time at the A-10 tournament, and you're definitely onto something there about having to make a trade-off between – you can either be there for the entire A-10 tournament, or you can take off the first Thursday and Friday of the entire NCAA tournament, which I'm super happy I went to the A-10 tournament last week, but I'm also like at work and in my personal life, I'm just behind on stuff. I'm not really going to be able to pay as much attention as I would like the next 2 days, which is a shame because the NCAA tournament, the first 2 days are the best sporting event in the world, in my opinion.
Yeah.
But let's go ahead and jump into our A-10 tourney wrap. First, I just wanted to start off by, we need to acknowledge St. Louis and just what a kind of crazy, ridiculous season that they had. And I guess I'll throw it over to you to, pay your respects, first of all, and then, talk about what you saw from them, what you think changed.
Yeah, that was, I would say, the turning point where I really thought St. Louis could actually win in Brooklyn was that second half of the Davidson game. And obviously that's pretty easy to say considering they were one game from the title, but watching the Billikens absolutely shut down Davidson like that, they went to that 1-3-1 zone, which I don't think I've ever seen a team play like a very effective 1-3-1 against Davidson. I've seen them try to work the 2-3, and I know Slew went to that in the first half, That didn't work so well. Like Luke Frampton,
the two three got torched. Yeah,
the 2-3 got torched. I mean, Luke Frampton was hitting shots. I think John had a three or two in the first half, and Kellen had one or two. And you know, I think they went up 7 at one point. And I was like, all right, you know, Dave. I was watching, you know, my hall with a couple of buddies. One of my friend's parents were in town, so they were like, oh yeah, this Davidson team looks pretty good, right? And then the second half was just, I think my my roommate fell asleep in the second half. That's how bad it was for Davidson.
Davidson scored, what, 15 points in the second
half?
Something
like that. It was ridiculous. Like that, you know, that was when I realized, like, holy crap, St. Louis got its shit together. And it showed the next day. They came back and beat the Bonnies, and now they're going to the NCAA tournament. And could have never expected this if you asked me after they lost to Richmond, God knows, like 4 or 5 weeks ago.
Yeah, no, and I totally agree. It sounds obvious, but I think, you know, just for the purpose of articulating it, I was not, like, believing in them when they were playing the Davidson game until that second half. So, like, yeah, it's obvious to say, you know, I believed in them when they won the semifinal. obviously, right?
Right.
But I remember, like, watching the Davidson game. St. Louis got out to the hot start, and you're just kind of waiting for it to end the whole time, you know?
Sure.
And then they go into the 2-3. Davidson starts barraging them with threes and takes like a 27-20 lead. And just like that, all the hard work that St. Louis did to build up the lead is evaporated. So you're like, all right, this makes more sense. And then St. Louis makes a nice little run, but then there's that like weird technical foul where I'm still not totally sure what happened.
Oh, yeah.
And Davidson gets the 2 free throws before halftime. So like you're tied up going into halftime. And just like the entire time, you're just waiting for Davidson to sort of take over the game. And it was just a total ass kicking that I was not expecting in the second half. It was, you know, and really hats off to them. I've given Travis Ford a whole lot of shit, but that 1-3-1 zone with DJ Foreman at the top and using his length to trap and press, that's just inspired. That's a really good tactic. I don't know much about Virginia Tech. I don't know if we're gonna see it this week, but it was incredibly effective against Davidson, so kudos to him for rolling that out.
Yeah, and I didn't get to catch much of the championship game, believe it or not. I was in like a mandatory meeting, and I was trying to just stream on my phone as much as I could and trying to tweet at the same time, and it was not going well. And when I ran out, there was like 10 minutes left, and I watched the end of that, you know, St. Bonaventure, St. Louis game. Didn't really see St. Bonaventure play well at all that game. I missed the entire part where they were up and dominant. But what did you see in the Bonnies in that championship game, and how did you see St. Louis come back and take that one from them?
The Bonnies are just kind of a younger team, and I felt like, you know, in hindsight, maybe we should have seen this coming because St. Louis has so many seniors. They're so experienced. Tremaine Isabel's been a great college player. You know, at Drexel for a long time before he came here. You've got Javon Bess. You know, you've got more, just a lot more experience. DJ Foreman, too. I think he's a senior. And on the St. Bonaventure side, you get a team that's just, you know, you're relying on freshmen Kyle Lofton, Dominic Welch, Osun. You know, Osun is in foul trouble. It felt like there were a couple of times where he wasn't defending the way he should have. The Bonnies were up at 34-19 at one point, I think. And then St. Louis, going off the top of my head, so this might be wrong, but St. Louis closed the half on like an 8-0 run or something. So it was 34-27, or maybe it was 34-24 at half. I forget exactly. But either way, they made a little run to make the margin manageable before halftime. And I think stuff like that is just, you know, that's the sort of thing where you look back on the game and you're like, if we could have just changed the 2 minutes there where, you know, they really made their halftime deficit a lot more manageable. I think that's the sort of thing that just always feels like it comes back to bite you. St. Louis is, they're physical. We've known that they're physically dominant for a while. The difference maker for them was Tremaine Isabel. He was absolutely fantastic. I think if you're there watching them live and like actually had eyeballs on all their games like I did, he was the entire story of how St. Louis just got their shit figured out on offense. I think they moved, when he's clicking, you can move Javon Bess off the ball. Javon Bess looks great when he's like catching and shooting. He looks great when he's on a secondary defender and, you know, the other team's best defenders playing against Tremaine Isabel. Yeah, I thought that Isabel was really just played inspired basketball. He was fantastic. Mm-hmm. We've known St. Louis has the capacity to be good defensively. They've been a little hit or miss down the stretch of the conference season since they're still, you know, tweaking a lot of things that changed when Kartaeri Gordon, or after Gordon left the team. But, you know, I think Tremaine Isabelle was just the, he was absolutely tremendous.
I agree, and I think that's a good transition into the all-tourney team. Tremaine Isabelle obviously winning most outstanding player of the A-10 tournament, and I think that's well-deserved on all fronts. I mean, he played incredible, like you mentioned. And I think it all started with that 39-point performance at home against Duquesne on his senior night. You know, quite frankly, I don't think we've seen Tremaine Isabelle play on that level all year. I mean, he's been good, mm-hmm. like you've mentioned. He's had some good breakout performances. I watched a lot of SLU and non-conference play this year, which was kind of frustrating because, you know, they're not necessarily my team, but I'm always rooting on the Atlantic 10. And, you know, when I saw them lose to Pittsburgh, I was like more mad than I should have been. That was just kind of stupid. But regardless, he's been playing so much better lately. And just to see him win that award and go off in the tournament was great. And, you know, we talk about this time of the year, you know, filling out brackets or picking who's going to win the A-10 tournament. I think it often comes down to who has the seniors. And like you mentioned, Bonnie, you know, they have Courtney Stockard, they have Ladarian Griffin, but, you know, St. Louis is a more experienced roster. Tremaine Isabelle, Javon Best playing in their last game. You got guys like DJ Foreman as well. And, you know, I think that showed in that tournament game, and I hope it will show in the NCAA tournament as well.
Yeah. Yeah, so let's talk about the all A-10 tournament team. Mm-hmm. So first one was Tremaine Isabelle, player of the tournament. I think that was absolutely a no-brainer. The only thing is, I don't know if people realize this, but here's a little insight from Media Row. When you're voting for all 10 tournament team, and that includes the all tournament player, you have to turn in your ballot before or at the 4-minute timeout.
That's right.
Of the championship game. So you don't necessarily know who's going to win when you vote for your player of the tournament. So I remember it was a really interesting time because I think like right before that timeout, St. Louis went on like a 6-0 or 8-0 run or something like that, or they stretched their lead to 6 or 8, and it became more apparent that St. Louis just like was really probably going to win the game at that point. So, you know, I scribbled in Tremaine Isabelle, and I'm guessing a lot of people did too. But it was also like, it also makes you think, like, what if Nelson Caputo actually hits that three in the corner and then
right.
St. Bonaventure wins? And then, like, is Tremaine Isabelle still the player of the tournament? But, yeah, I think that's, you know, that's a little, like, I learned that for the first time last season when I was in D.C. for the tournament. And, you know, we had to decide, like, is Jeff Doughton or Peyton Aldridge the player of the tournament? I don't know who's going to win this game, so
yeah,
it's tough
right.
for me to say that. Because that was such a close title game, too. So, you know, I think Tremaine Isabelle, no argument from me. Javon Best was also fantastic. You know, I think the questionable inclusion for me was Cyril Langevin.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure what your thoughts are on this, but first of all, Langevin didn't have a good game against VCU offensively. I think he had 7 points on 3 of 8 shooting and 6 rebounds. And that's also to 4 turnovers. So, like, their biggest game of the tournament, he didn't play very well. He played well against LaSalle, which is, you know, it's LaSalle. But I also don't think people realize he was guarding Santo Silva when Santo Silva put up 26 and 22.
Right.
So the fact that he got voted to the all-tournament team, like, and, like, I love Cyril Langevin. I think he's a great player. But if you're just telling me he's one of the top 5 players that we saw this weekend, I don't see that.
Yeah, I'd agree with you. I thought, and I saw this on Twitter too, to kind of confirm, I thought the fifth guy that probably should have taken his place was Jordan Goodwin on St. Louis. I don't think anybody noticed how good of a last game he had. And in my mind, the same way the coaches vote for A-10 player of the year and all tournament team, or, you know, all conference teams, I think you have to wait, you know, conference play like you wait the championship game a little bit more, and to see Jordan Goodwin put up 16 points and 14 boards, I think it was, in that game.
Yeah.
I mean, he was pivotal towards that win. And, I mean, that wasn't his first good performance, too. They played for 4 days. I think he had a 17-point night as well. He was great on the boards all tournament. Like, intangibly, I think he was the reason St. Louis went on to win, regardless of how good Tremaine Isabelle shot and Javon Best, they were knocking down their shots. I mean, Jordan Goodwin played awesome, too. I would have liked to see him as the fifth guy on the tournament team, but at the end of the day, this is all kind of pointless. So,
yeah, for sure. Do you agree with Marcus Santos Silva's inclusion?
Oh, heck yes. I mean, anytime a guy puts up 26 points and 20-plus rebounds, I'm completely sold on that. I love to see that. I thought he was playing monster basketball, and I think it goes to show, too, that, you know, Marcus Evans goes down with an injury. VCU looks like it's tapped. he keeps fighting and he rebounds absolutely everything on the offensive end. It seemed like the rest of his team played awful, and that kind of was the case. When, I mean, you lose your starting point guard, your playmaker, the guy that you go to score when you need a bucket. And Santos Silva, even when VCU seemingly had no offense, just played his way to keeping VCU in that game against Rhode Island. So I completely, fully endorse that pick.
Yeah, I did not. He was not on my ballot. At the same time, I'm not like gonna argue with it. 26 and 22. Even if he only played one game, didn't play on Saturday, you want to throw him on there? Totally. You know, I'm not gonna argue too hard about that. So that's the A10 tournament. I think any parting thoughts on the A10 tournament?
Overall, a lot of fun. Over at A10 Talk, we did a staff prediction thing where we all guessed who was gonna win, who was gonna be the bust, who was gonna be the sleeper, and you know, VCU fans were livid because I think only one or two of us picked VCU to win the championship. And I don't know what it is. I mean, in any other league, I would say, yeah, heck, go with the team that was 16-2, that won, you know, that's top 40 in KenPom, has the best defense and has won a bunch on the road. But in the Atlantic 10 tournament, it's just never the case. Like, someone else is going to win the tournament. And I think that's what makes this league so fun. What's that?
I mean, do you feel like that's just an injury luck pick, though? Because Rhode Island was up, or sorry, VCU was up by like 8 in the first half when Marcus Evans went down.
No, I'd agree.
They clearly, I think it's Malik Crowfield who is their backup point guard, and then PJ Bird is like a freshman, but he's not quite there yet, so he gets less minutes. But like, they're not the same team with Malik Crowfield playing points that a Marcus Evans.
No, I completely agree with that. I still think VCU would have had troubles winning this weekend just because it just seems somebody always comes up and takes the crown. And I know it was obviously unlucky for Marcus Evans to go down. And VCU, you know, we can talk hindsight all we want, but at the end of the day, they did lose. I still think they're talented enough to beat Rhode Island on a neutral court without Marcus Evans, and they almost did. So, you know, props to them for fighting. But yeah, I mean, regardless – and the 6-seed won, so that's where we're at.
Yeah, and that's, I kind of want partial credit for that because I think I've talked up SLU as like, you know, hey, if they finish top four, watch out. They've got as much talent as anybody. And then I just I totally wrote them off after they didn't finish in the top four. So I demand partial credit.
We're going to give you partial. Just partial. I'm going to mark it down for you.
Okay, perfect. So A10 tournament in Brooklyn, always a good time. I can't wait to go back. Hope I can make it next
year. Last thing, I am going to be there next year, so you better be there next year. I have decided for sure. It's not over my spring break, but I'm going to go no matter what because I can't watch from home again. I got to be there. So it's going to happen.
Yeah, man, I miss college. I wish being able to just say things like that.
I know.
All right, so let's move on to the NCAA tournament. Grant, you've done some work on who St. Louis and VCU are playing. I'm embarrassed to admit I've never been so far behind on, like, the rest of the entire NCAA. I've been so tunnel vision hyper-focused on the A10 that I just feel totally lost when I'm filling out my bracket. And it's actually – I'm, like, in the process of filling it out right now, and I've got Michigan and Michigan State meeting in the Final Four. And it's like that's not going to – well, I mean, I'm saying like, it's like – you know, when you fill out a test and it's like the answer to everything is B, and you just think like, there's no way that's right. That can't be right. That's the same way I feel looking at Michigan and Michigan State in the Final Four. So I got to blow this whole thing up and do it over again. Anyway, nobody wants to hear about my bracket. What we want to hear is you talk about the research that you've done on St. Louis and VCU and what they who they're playing and sort of like, you know, what you think the matchup looks like and various strengths and weaknesses and all that. So let's go ahead, and since we just talked about St. Louis for a while, let's go ahead and start with them.
Sure, I'll start with St. Louis. So I did do a little bit of research, and at the end of the day, I really live on KenPom. I have not seen a lot of college basketball outside of the A10 either. You know, it seems when there's four or five games on a night, that's where all my interest is. But regardless, I did do a bit of work. You know, one thing that stands out for me in that St. Louis Virginia Tech game is the fact that Virginia Tech is shooting 39.4% as a team from long range. That's eighth nationally. And St. Louis, on the other hand, is just 30.8%, which is 327th nationally. Now, we know St. Louis's strong suit this year has not been three-point shooting. They don't live from behind the arc, but Virginia Tech does. So this is something where, you know, Travis Ford and the Billikens have to dictate what the style of the game is going to be. It cannot be a shootout. Javon Best and Tremaine Izabaugh, you know, they've been shooting well. They were shooting well in the 8-10 tournament. But, you know, you can't just start hucking up threes and expect to beat the Hokies that way. They've got a pair of guards that are really good. I believe a guy named Justin Robinson, he's coming back off injury, so he's a good guard to look out for. And the Hokies will bury the Billikens from three if they play that way. So St. Louis is going to have to get inside. They're going to have to battle it out, and they're going to have to try to beat them in the paint. And that's one main key to look for. And along those lines, I think Hassan French is just going to have to be enormous. We've seen games this year when he's gone off, he's been their main scorer. He's crashing the boards. He's getting out in transition. I think a lot of his points actually do come in transition, it seems. And, you know, when St. Louis is forcing turnovers, they're getting out and running, and you know, French is finishing at the hoop or above the rim. You know, that's when they're scoring their points, and that's when they're at their best. Again, this is a game St. Louis wants to be in the 40s or the 50s if it can. I don't expect that to happen. Virginia Tech has a very good defense as well, but they have an outstanding offense. And if SLU is not absolutely at its best, shutting down every player, they've got a guy, N'Keal Alexander Walker, he's their best player. They've got a really good big man named Kerry Blackshear, who's tough to defend. You know, if St. Louis is not playing great defense, this game could get out of hand quickly. And in doing a little bit of analysis, I think this is a pretty good matchup for Virginia Tech, in all honesty. St. Louis is a pretty overrated 13 seed when you look at, like, KenPom comparisons. And I think Virginia Tech's a pretty underrated 4 seed. So as much as I like the A-10, I think you got to pick Virginia Tech in this game and just root, you know, one way or another, you get either a pick right in your bracket or St. Louis pulls the upset of the century and you're happy either way. That's my take.
Yeah, it's an 11-point spread on KenPom. It's an 11-point game on KenPom. I think the spread was like 10 or 10.5 last I saw it. I think the real wild card is Justin Robinson and how he looks when he comes back.
Right.
And, you know, please take this with a grain of salt because I've done nothing but, like, read about this. But, yeah, you just never know how a guy's going to look when he comes off of, you know, a 12-game absence, which I think is what he's going to be coming back from. And then also, apologies if you mentioned it. I don't think you did, but Virginia Tech also forces teams to shoot a ton of threes. So in addition to taking a lot of threes themselves, their opponents shoot about 50% of their shots from behind the arc. Sorry, over 50% of their shots from behind the arc, which is just absolutely outrageous.
Yeah.
So they shut down the paint really, really hard, and they're going to make St. Louis shoot jumpers, or they're going to try to make St. Louis shoot jumpers. And St. Louis doesn't do; they just still don't do that very well, or not well enough to beat good teams.
Yeah.
Anyway.
No, I'd agree. And a crazy stat I came across in looking at Virginia Tech's 3-point shooting on the other end of the floor too is, you know, the Hokies have 6 guys who shoot 35% or better from long range, and St. Louis has none. No one's shooting better than 35% on the Billikens. So, you know, if they're forcing, if they're really shutting down the paint, and St. Louis has to look to outside jumpers, it's going to get ugly in a hurry. But silver lining, St. Louis did beat Virginia Tech last year on a neutral court. So if history is telling it all, then, you know, maybe the Billikens keep dancing to Sunday.
There's a familiarity factor there.
There you go.
Yeah, do you think – so you're thinking this game looks like a rock fight, it sounds like.
It looks like a rock fight. St. Louis wants it to be a rock fight. That's my take. I mean, if the Billikens can, again, keep it in the 50s, 60s maybe, and get a few shots to fall from behind the arc, I mean, bottom line, they're going to be taking some threes. And if Javon Best and Tremaine Izabaugh are hot, you know, maybe Deion Wiley sneaks in there and hits a couple, St. Louis could hang around. But, you know, if this game is high on offense, St. Louis isn't able to shut down Virginia Tech on D, you know, the Hokies get out and running, it could be a 20-point blowout.
Yeah, St. Louis have crawled up into the you know, higher scoring arc since Tremaine Izabaugh started going nuts.
Yeah.
I think he's got, I'm trying to figure out when exactly it happened, but I forget, was it like the VCU game or the Mason game? But if you look at their point totals, they scored like 81 against Mason, 85 against Duquesne, but those are both faster paced games.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they only scored 57 in their loss to the Bonnies. And then I guess their wins were in the 60s and 50s for the most part in the A-10 tournament. So, all right. I thought I was about to make a good point there, but it turns out I wasn't. So, even with Tremaine Izabaugh clicking, they still don't put up a whole lot of point totals, even though their offense looks a lot more effective.
Yeah.
So
it's going to be interesting. It's the late night game too. This is something I didn't say that I should mention. I'm all mad that we got to see two A-10 NCAA tournament games that are on like right at the same time.
The game starts 17 minutes apart, right?
Like 17 minutes apart, and they're both like tip. But the thing is though, like some of those games will, since they're always pushed back, those, you know, end of the night games sometimes get delayed a ton because, you know, the game before goes into overtime, blah blah blah. Like some of those games don't tip till like 10:45 or something like that. So the hope is one of them gets pushed back big so that we can see, you know, St. Louis or something in the first half, VCU then in their first half. St. Louis, something like that, along the lines of we can watch as much A-10 basketball as we can. Because I really do not want to screen skip when we have 32 games in 2 days and two are 17 minutes apart. That does not sound like fun.
Yeah. Yeah, that's those are all good points you're making. Do we want to move on to VCU?
Let's do it.
I feel like I had a different point to make about St. Louis, but it's escaping me. So talk to us about VCU. They play University of Central Florida,
yep.
UCF. National champions in football, and they have the 7'6" Taco Fall, I believe is how you say his name.
I believe, yeah.
At center, so he's this is like, I don't know. This is going to be interesting, and we also don't know if Marcus Evans is 100%. I saw there was some confusion on Twitter this morning. Apparently, he was questionable, but then he was probable, but now he's questionable again, and maybe it was just a bad report, and he was never actually probable. But anyway, there's some mystery around how well he's actually feeling. And obviously UCF, you know, they're the 8 seed, they're favored I think by a point, so it's going to be a tough matchup either way.
Yeah, this is about as 50-50 of a game you can get in the tournament, it seems, this year. I mean, you said they're favored by a point according to Vegas. I believe at this point KenPom has VCU as a 1-point favorite, so it seems you should pretty much flip a coin. And to that point, these two teams play very similar styles, both on offense and defense. It was kind of crazy. The first time I looked at, and I wrote a little bit about this on A10Talk.com, but the first time I looked at UCF and kind of their KenPom breakdown, they really reminded me of St. Louis. When you kind of look at the green and the red that's spread out across offensive and defensive numbers, to my point, they play really good defense. Obviously, their adjusted efficiency is top 40 in the nation. When you got a guy like Taco Fall, you're not going to score a lot of buckets inside. Again, he's 7'6". That's pretty incredible. So he's tough to shut down. They play great three-point defense, too. They can defend out on the perimeter. They block a lot of shots. But where they really reminded me of St. Louis, and I had to take a little bit of a closer look at this, was they are 333rd in the nation in free throw shooting at just 64.5%. So, you know, okay. They play great D, they shut you down, but they do not hit their free throws. And the reason for this, because I looked a little bit closer, none of the guys shoot that poorly from the line except for Taco Fall, who was just 36.1% from the line on the season, and he's taken 158 free throw attempts. So whenever he is fouled, it is basically you can chalk up two misses in a row because he is not a good shooter at all. But at the same time, what's that?
That's Hassan French bad.
Pretty much. But at the same time, you know, Taco Fall at 7'6", if he catches the ball 2 feet from the basket, there's nothing you can do but foul him if you want to prevent a basket. So that's where it gets tough. And, you know, I looked at this game a little bit. I mean, UCF is a better shooting team than VCU is. You know, they play slightly better offense. They're in a slightly better league. You know, VCU shuts down the perimeter a lot better. VCU's better on defense. All in all, I think this is going to be, again, a rock fight. It's going to be a low-scoring game. You know, the goal for VCU, assuming Marcus Evans is in, which, you know, knock on wood at this point, because if he's not in, that's not going to fare pretty well for VCU. But I think the goal for VCU in this game is just drive the ball into Taco Fall's chest, get him to get into foul trouble.
I'm crazy excited to see how Santos Silva plays against Taco Fall.
That is going to be fun.
I think they're just like they're both huge, but they're just opposite body types, you know.
Yeah.
Santos Silva has that, you know, overgrown linebacker kind of build to him, and Taco Fall is just the stick figure. He's like Gumby.
He is literally, you look at him on the court and you're like, oh my gosh, that he is so much taller than everybody else. It's so tough. And I watched him play earlier this year against St. Joseph's, because they met in the, I think it was the Charleston Classic. And the Hawks, you know, the Hawks have nobody big down low to defend. So, you know, that one, they got blown out. But I think Marcus Santos Silva, if anybody, you know, has a chance at defending him, he is so physical. We watched him, you know, fight for those boards in the A-10 tournament, get on the offensive glass. I think he's going to have a good chance. He has to stay out of foul trouble, and he's got to hope that Taco Fall gets into foul trouble.
Yeah, and one thing about VCU that I think is really interesting is, like, they shot 56% from two in conference play.
Right.
So they're an incredibly good team inside the arc. So, and they shot 53.7% for the year, which is 52nd in the country, so not quite top 50, but 56.7% in conference play. They get inside really well.
Yeah.
I don't know exactly what the numbers are at the rim, but I think they've got guards that drive and get to the rim really well. I think they do a really good job of post passing. I think Santos Silva has good hands, so, you know, if a guard drives and you know, draws the defender, Santos Silva is always there for dump passes and can finish him really well.
Yeah.
So I think if there's a team where, like, that can neutralize a guy like Taco Fall, I think it's VCU. And I don't know if, you know, I don't really, like, I haven't seen a lot of them play this year, UCF, that is. So
yeah.
I'm just sort of spitballing here, but I think when you look at teams that shut down the paint, and then you look at VCU is a team that's able to neutralize a lot of the teams that are really good at doing things like shutting down the paint.
I would completely agree. And I know I keep belaboring this point, but I mean, I can't stress enough how much VCU just has to take it to the hoop. You mentioned dump it mm-hmm. off to Marcus Santos Silva if the shot's not there over Taco, if you don't get the foul. But, you know, Evans this year ranked first in the conference in fouls drawn per 40 minutes, and MSS was third in the same metric. So VCU is mm-hmm. really good at getting to the free throw line, and I know they convert pretty well when they're there. I mean, Evans is a good free throw shooter. Guys like Van are good free throw shooters as well. So that yeah. literally has to be a key. I mean, if it's going to be a rock fight, it's going to be a low-scoring game, and you're able to get to the line and earn your freebies there and maybe even put Taco Fall on the bench at the same time, you know, that's going to be huge. And
yeah.
we've seen VCU fall in love with the three sometimes this year, and that's gotten them into trouble. I know early in second halves, you know, they've allowed teams to come back. Look at that Old Dominion game on the road earlier this year, and VCU starts settling. You know, the other teams get easier buckets, and things start to run awry. Again, pound the ball inside. I know you've got Taco Fall defending with 7'6". He's got a huge wingspan, but get him into foul trouble, attack their bigs, and try to make something happen in the paint.
And I think and they know that VCU doesn't play scared.
Yeah.
Rhodes is a good coach. He's gonna, you know, I think you're gonna see him attack the paint really hard. And if they get a couple of charges drawn on him, I think they'll be okay with that if it means that they're going really hard at the paint.
I'd agree with you.
And just one more point I want to make is that yeah, VCU didn't look the same when Marcus Evans went down late in the first half. It's not really something I'm guessing that they've prepared for a whole lot, but now, you know, they've had a few days to practice, so they're mentally prepared for the situation of, like, what if Marcus isn't 100%?
Sure.
What if he, you know, what if he, his minutes have to be limited? What if we can't really rely on him? So I would be surprised if, even if he doesn't go, or even if he doesn't look the same, you got to think that they're going to be a little bit more prepared for it, you know,
mm-hmm.
especially because I think Rhodes is the kind of coach who understands that and will have a good, you know, good plan to address it.
I'd agree with you. It should be a good game. Who are you taking?
So it sounds like we both like VCU in the first one, and it sounds like, as much as we would love to pick SLU, it sounds like we're both kind of on Virginia Tech in the other one.
Mm-hmm.
Is that right?
Yeah, I've got VCU winning this game. I'm going to have to look back and see what this Marcus Evans rumor chatter is about, because if he's not healthy and he's going to play very limited minutes, then I might have to make a change. But assuming we got a healthy Marcus Evans and Mike Rhodes mm-hmm. has had time to prepare for this game, like I think he has, I think VCU is going to win.
Yeah, VCU is still a juggernaut when Marcus Evans is healthy.
Mm-hmm.
St. Louis had an amazing run through the conference tournament, but let's not forget that they were down 10 in the second half to Richmond.
Sure.
And their title hopes are very nearly over before they begin. So I think that, you know, they look really, really good when Tremaine Isabel is clicking, but they still, like, it's just not a team that plays with a lot of margin for error.
It's a win-win. Pick the Hokies in your bracket, and if St. Louis pulls the upset, then all the better, right?
Yeah, I guess so. Don't ask me how to fill out a bracket. I'm terrible at it. All right, so that's the NCAA tournament representation for the A10. Real quick before we move on, I do want to plug our Hey 10 Bracket Challenge. So I'm PD Buckets. Follow me on Twitter at PD Buckets. Here with Grant Libetz at Grant Libetz on Twitter. We are running a Hey 10 Bracket Challenge, and I've posted on Twitter a couple of times. Basically, all it is $10 entry, winner takes all. And we've got about 25 entries right now, so $250 on the line.
Hell yeah.
Anybody wants to go ahead and enter, then you know, we can increase that pot.
I got to get in there too. I've been I haven't been looking at the bracket too much. This is my night to prepare.
It's a bad book for the co-host.
Oh, okay, I know. Challenge. You got to send me the link again. I'm hopping in. Right. I'm looking forward
to it. Need me to fill out your bracket too?
No. I can do that much.
So let's move on. Off-season developments. It's been an interesting, I don't even know how to describe what the hell has been going on this off-season. Where do you even start? Phil Martelli is gone. Phil Martelli is not the coach of St. Joe's anymore. I was shocked by that. Then you've got guys like Jeff Neubauer is coming back. Jeff Neubauer is not gone. Neither is Chris Mooney. Maurice Joseph has left GW. That's, you know, not a huge surprise. And then we've got this situation going on in Massachusetts where it's like McCall fires all of his assistants. I think a fourth player announced that they're transferring today. So we're, you know, 3 days into the theoretical offseason, and it's, you know, we've already got a fair amount of chaos happening. And it's a lot. So I guess we'll start with Phil Martelli.
Yeah.
Did you have any idea that this was going to, like, did you have any idea?
Man, I feel like I would have maybe guessed back in like early conference play when SJU just got its butt handed to it against like GW, against Mason, like it was just tanking. And I remember seeing on Twitter, you know, some guys were calling for Martelli's job, and I was kind of like, no, this is ridiculous. And I thought about it, and I'm like, well, he's been there a while, and, you know, this was kind of their year. I was like, I guess it's not too far-fetched. But then, you know, St. Joseph's got a few decent wins. They started playing all right. I mean, they finished 10th. That's nothing to brag about. It was a bad year for Phil Martelli. You know, but the last 2 years have just been the worst injury luck I've ever seen for a college basketball team. So, you know, you got to discount that. And then the year before that, they make the NCAA tournament. So, you know, I tweeted out something about that. Like, hey, this seems weird. You know, like, guy gets one bad year and he's gone. And, you know, I had some Hawks fans come at me and say, well, you know, this is right. 10 years ago, yada, yada, there was no success. This wasn't happening. And I was, like, kind of thinking to myself, like, all right, well, why didn't he get canned then? Like, why now?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I heard the rumors too, and I was like, I was just not buying it. People forget that last year they were up on Rhode Island, or they were either up on Rhode Island or tied with Rhode Island in the A-10 tournament semifinal before Shavar Newkirk went out with like 2 minutes left or something like that. Just like, in addition to all of the injury luck that you know about, which is like, I think Shavar Newkirk missed the season, Lamar Kimball missed the season, Charlie Brown missed last season. You know, I think like Pierre Francesco Oliva had one of the most horrific knee injuries I've ever seen in college basketball earlier this year. I think there's like a lot of like the really big long season spanning injuries that people talk about when they talk about St. Joe's having injury luck. But like, don't forget that they had Rhode Island on the ropes and their best player went down in crunch time in the A-10 tournament last year. Like otherwise, we could very easily be talking about them, you know, coming off like a third tournament appearance in 5 or 6 years.
That's a whole different story. And do you remember St. Joseph's absolutely cooked Rhode Island on the road in the last week and a half of the regular season? They won by like 30.
Beat them by 30. Yeah, I do remember that. They were a team that I think was by far the fourth best team in KenPom rating in the A-10. Like, people looked at the 10-8 record and they assumed that St. Joe's wasn't that good, but they also, like, in addition to injury luck, they just also lost a lot of close games.
Yeah.
So they were a team that I think was like dramatically underrated last year, and also, you know, I also think that like remember they didn't have Charlie freaking Brown.
Yeah,
last
I mean
year,
this year's A-10 leading scorer was gone all of last year, and they still finished fourth.
Yeah. So like I think at the end of the day, if a guy, you know, if you don't meet expectations and, you know, quite honestly, you fall pretty far short of expectations for, I guess, like what's a third year in a row now. Mm-hmm. It shouldn't be shocking that a guy loses his job. But like, if you look at, you know, first of all, it's Phil Martelli. He's a Philly legend. And then second of all, they're just one of the most snake bit teams in the country by injuries over the past couple of years. You know, that's when it becomes really, really surprising to me. I'll be honest. I heard the grumbling and I just never thought it was actually going to happen.
I just feel bad. I mean, it's just such a tough way, you know, to see him go. He's been there forever. Like you mentioned, he's a Philadelphia legend, and for him to just get canned, I mean, that's just such a horrible way for him to end his career. I mean, if they had asked him maybe like politely to retire, I don't know how that would have gone over, but
you know, I wouldn't be surprised if they did. And this is not based on any information or anything. This is just a very, very far away perspective. I don't think Phil's the kind of guy who would do that.
Right.
So if he feels like he's being forced out by the AD, he seems to me like he's more of a kind of like F you, I'm not quitting, you're going to have to fire me kind of personality. But you know, I love Phil. I know a lot of people don't like him. I think he's great. I haven't talked about it on this podcast yet, but I think if you're a reporter who's in a post game press conference and Phil's there and you're asking him questions, he tries really hard to give like good, thoughtful answers,
which
is just, I think, an awesome quality in a coach. I'm not sure if you've ever asked him anything in the post game, but last year after that Rhode Island game, you know, I asked him how losing Shavar Newkirk changed his approach to his end of game strategy, and he just gave this great answer about how they don't have anybody on the bench who can do what Shavar Newkirk can do, and he doesn't believe in that sort of next man up philosophy because it just doesn't apply at the college level. So it's more about like trying to figure out how to make it work with what you have. And I just thought that was really fantastic, where a lot of coaches would have given you some boilerplate stuff that's just not really helpful, you know.
He's a great dude, and I'm sad he's gone. I can echo what you say about him in press conferences. I mean, I remember going to the A-10 tournament my senior year of high school, the first year, and I was just blown away at how well put together he was in the media room. I mean, like you mentioned, he answers every question. It's well thought out. You know, he gives good, thorough answers. He doesn't BS like a lot of the coaches will. And I just thought he was a cool dude and a great guy. And, you know, his hard work is shown on the court. And unfortunately, this wasn't his season. But, man, I did not see this one coming. Let's just say that.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, let's move on to Mojogon. I feel like we don't have to spend as much time on this one because this is the one that's no surprise at all. But Mojo, you know, just wasn't – they're not even trending toward getting it done in GW. I think what's really concerning is, like, their freshmen didn't get a lot of playing time this year, which is, like, if you're bringing in freshman classes that can't compete on one of the worst teams in a bad A-10, then, you know, how well is your recruiting really doing? So – I like Mojo personally. I think he's a good dude. He's super young. I think he's going to land on his feet. You know, he's going to go get an assistant coaching job somewhere. And, you know, he might work his way back up into the head coaching ranks in a few years. For now, I think it's been pretty clear for a while that he was only ever going to be a bridge out of the Mike Lonergan era. Excuse me.
Yeah, I mean, let's be honest. I mean, Mojo was a good guy. He wasn't a great coach, but he did inherit an absolute dumpster fire of a program. I mean, George Washington has been just in shambles with the whole Mike Lonergan situation. And, you know, there's been articles out there revolving all of that. And it has not been a good look for the program. And obviously success on the basketball court has not followed whatsoever since that NIT victory. I think it was back in 2016. I feel bad for Mojo because I think in any other circumstance, you know, you got more players to rely on. You have a better recruiting base. You don't have all this bad press surrounding the program. I think he would have a chance to do better. But, I mean, this year was obviously an utter disappointment. I think the Colonials were picked to finish 13th and basically did. So, it makes sense as the move to get rid of him and try to move on. Like you mentioned, it's the bridge out of the Lonergan era, hopefully for them. This is a GW team. It's going to take a couple years to get better. But hopefully the Colonials are moving in that direction because, you know, you look back to a win over Virginia at home, you know, it was a top 10 win, and that was an awesome, awesome moment for this program, and I'd love to see it get back to that stage.
Yeah. Yeah, and one thing to look at, I think, whenever we're evaluating whether or not a coach is on the hot seat, the common thread with the coaches who are gone and the coaches who are returning is whether or not the AD who hired them is in place.
Right.
Martelli and Mojo, new ADs who have no connection to them, no ties to them, were not the ones who made the decision that the contract that they have was the one that they wanted to sign for the school. So you always got to be aware of those new ADs. They're the new ones who have no attachment to you are the ones who are just so much more likely to decide to go ahead and eat the rest of your contract. Whereas Neubauer and Mooney, well, I know Mooney. I'm guessing with Neubauer. I haven't actually looked it up. But I'm pretty sure Fordham hasn't changed their AD recently. So Neubauer and Mooney are also, guys who they were signed by the current AD at the school. And the current AD is going to give you, they're just going to give you more rope. That's just the way it works. Were you surprised that either of those guys came back?
Mooney and Neubauer, you're referring to?
Yeah, Mooney and Neubauer, sorry.
I was most surprised. Honestly, most surprised probably about the Jeff Neubauer news, because I was on Twitter, as I tend to be, as much as I am, unfortunately, it's too much. But I see a tweet come out from Jeff Goodman announcing that Jeff Neubauer had been fired. And I was like, oh, my God. And it was like 30 seconds after Fordham had just lost to Richmond in the A-10 tournament. And I was like, holy crap, like, this was quick, and he deleted the tweet right away, and I was like, okay, obviously he got the news, he jumped the gun, this wasn't supposed to come out until later.
I suppose I should have led with that we all thought that Neubauer got fired, while he was still on the court.
I thought that was, given. So, obviously before that, I was like, okay, yeah. Mooney's the most likely, but then I was like, oh, well, shit, that sucks.
Yeah.
But yeah, the tweet was deleted, and I was like, okay, well, this is going to come out in the next couple hours, and nothing did, and the day passed, and then some news came out that, the Fordham AD decides to extend, Jeff Neubauer for another year, and I was like, well, what was that news that we saw on Twitter then? So that was kind of just weird. I don't know.
Yeah. Do you think Goodman guesses Scoop sometimes, where it's just really obvious that a guy should be fired? He'll just tweet out that they've parted ways.
I don't know. I think
I don't want to accuse him of anything, but I don't know how you get that wrong.
I know. I think maybe I guess my only defense is did he read a press release wrong, or did somebody change their mind? I have no idea how you do that.
you think Fordham's AD is just I changed my mind.
Yeah, I don't know, but Fordham's Fordham.
They're
going to stay Fordham.
They're making sure of that. And I did fact check myself. David Roach is their AD. He's been there for 7 years now. So,
okay.
Yeah, it's the same guy. It's the same guy who hired Neubauer. That's always so important when you determine whether or not, or when you're trying to determine whether or not a guy's on the hot seat.
Yeah, I don't know what to say. If you're Fordham, yeah, you have a good base of freshmen to build your future on, but that has not helped Fordham in the past. Everybody has transferred away. Guys don't stay at Fordham. So it's just tough for me as an AD to rationalize and say to myself, oh, okay, this is the fourth time we've had a good freshman class. I bet these guys are going to hang around for 4 years, It just, Nick Honor had an awesome year, and you think, wow, okay, if he's the future of this program, maybe, just maybe, Fordham will start to get things going in the right direction. But I just cannot see that happening.
Yeah, I haven't seen a lot that makes me think that that Neubauer is the guy.
You know?
Even if you want to explain away all the many faults of Fordham's program, which is totally fine, it's been a disaster for decades, basically. But even then, I don't know if we've really seen anything from Neubauer that's he's going to get them consistently to, even middle of the pack.
Right. What are your thoughts on Chris Mooney?
Thoughts on Mooney are, I really want to get a guy from Fire Mooney Mafia on the pod.
I think they all want to stay anonymous, don't they?
I think they do want to stay anonymous. We've extended an invite. They're super cordial, and they're like, yeah, we'll think about it. But at the end of the day, I do think that they're fairly connected inside of the Richmond area. They know some, they are familiar with people in the athletic department. So I don't know if anybody is going to want to, reveal themselves as being part of the effort, which a lot of people have taken really personally to, put the billboard up that says go ahead and fire him, that are just really vocally angry And you know, I kind of wonder, you know, how much does the AD not want to appear like he's bending to public whims by bringing back Mooney? And again, that's the sort of thing where it's just like, I don't know.
Yeah. Do you
that's not a statement based on inside information or anything like that. It's just, you know, does he not want to look like he's letting the fans run the program?
Right. In a sense, almost is the fire Mooney mafia shtick backfiring to prevent Mooney from leaving? That's an interesting question right there. I guess I was surprised, but I'm also not surprised. It just seems at this point, like, what does Chris Mooney have to do to get fired? I don't know, like, finished 14th, maybe? It's surprising, but, I mean, there is another, you know, rationalization, like, oh my gosh, look at this young roster that's got, you know, Jacob Gilliard, Grant Golden, a core of good freshmen. You got Nick Sherrod, who was injured all year, who was supposed to be a top three scorer. Like, look at all of this talent that's coming back, and, you know, they're going to be so good next year. And, like, we say that every year, but again, it's like the Fordham thing. Like, they just aren't. And I would love for, like, Chris. I think it would be so cool if Chris Mooney, you know, went through all this BS this year, and not that it's complete BS. Like, there definitely is reason that Chris Mooney shouldn't be the coach of Richmond. But the whole billboard thing, I felt bad for him. And if I saw him, you know, bounce back and become an awesome coach after that and lead Richmond to, like, the NCAA tournament in a year or two, like, that'd be really cool. But again, I'm just not giving him the benefit of the doubt because it's been like 8 years and it hasn't happened. And he's had talented rosters and it's been turned over. Guys have transferred. I just don't see it happening again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that for the past few years, it's been like, oh, Richmond's going to be great this year. And they're just not. It's just not turning into NCAA tournament appearances. Now, when we had Matt Shelton-Eyed on the pod earlier this year, Grant, you don't remember that because you were incredibly hungover and couldn't make it. But he pointed out that Richmond has actually surprisingly been like top 100 in KenPom for a lot of those years that, you know, Mooney fans are upset about. But like the Sweet 16 season, it was 2011, and since then they've been like 109, 83, 91, 59, 99, 92 in KenPom, the last 2 years were 181 and 201.
Okay.
But I never would have guessed that before Matt, you know, came on the pod and told us that, because, you know, before then I just assumed that they kind of sucked basically since the Sweet 16. And that's not totally true. They've been decent. They just haven't had any tournament appearances since the Sweet 16.
That's interesting. Yeah, I mean, and that Richmond team 2 years ago with TJ Klein as a senior, you know, he was A-10 player of the year. Mm-hmm. I think they finished third that year.
Was it third or fourth?
I could have sworn it was third.
I thought they were fourth, but either way, they got the double
bye. And, you know, not a tournament contender, but still a solid year and a solid showing. Yeah, so maybe you're right. I mean, maybe these 2 years have just kind of been the turning point in the eyes of the AD, but I do see the frustrations from the Fire Mooney Mafia group, and I can't imagine, you know, having to wait 10, 15 years to see your team go back to the NCAA tournament if you're one that has had some success in the past and one that, you know, has come to expect it maybe once every 5, 6 years at the most, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I really hope that we can get someone from Fire Mooney Mafia on the pod at some point.
so that we can go deeper on this.
Because I have all sorts of questions.
I do too.
I just haven't really, you know, gone super deep on them yet.
Yeah. The A-10 deep dive.
Exactly. The last thing that I wanted to talk about was just what the hell is going on at UMass. Have you been keeping up with this at all?
I honestly haven't. I mean, I saw the tweets that all these guys got fired, and I, to be honest, have not been on Twitter the last couple of days. You might be able to shed more light on this than I will.
So I don't exactly know the order of events, but the important things are, first, UMass fired all three of their assistant coaches.
Yeah.
So I forget their names, but it's like Matt McCall is just cleaning house.
I know Rasheen Davis was fired, and he's like one of their best assistant coaches and best recruiters.
I mean, I can't you know, I watch a ton of college basketball. I can't really tell you anything about like which assistant coaches are better than the others.
I've heard I've heard he's a great assistant coach, and I'm pretty sure he's a really good recruiter too.
People love him. Like, that's the one people are mad about. Yeah. But yeah, so they cleaned house. They fired all their assistant coaches. They've got like four players transferring. It's Curtis Cobb, Luan Pipkins, I think.
I saw Pipkins, yeah.
I forget, yeah. So Pipkins we've known about. He announced on his senior day, yeah. Basically on Snapchat. Curtis Cobb, Luan Pipkins. I'm blanking on the other two names right now, but like they've got a ton of transfers. They just cleaned house. You know, McCall is in year two. I think for the most part, when a new coach inherits a program, you can expect this sort of stuff in year one. Mm-hmm. If you're a UMass fan, are you concerned by everything that's going on at the end of year two here?
See, I would be. And I know I got in an argument on Twitter with a couple UMass fans after I saw that Pipkins was transferring. And, you know, they were like, oh, you know, that's addition by subtraction. It's all right. It was going to happen. I don't know what the consensus. I'm sure it hasn't been great on Twitter recently regarding the rest of these guys transferring. But I have gotten the sense that, you know, some UMass fans are fine with kind of starting over, and maybe just from an outsider's perspective that seems a little ludicrous, considering, I don't know, maybe if they had gotten their act together next year with a lot of these guys that are seniors. I mean, you have a talented roster, right? Maybe it just didn't click this year, maybe things just didn't work. I don't know. Again, I don't know the inside scoop into the program, but you know, 2 years ago, or at least in November, it felt like I was going to be saying, or we would all be saying, hey, UMass has a chance to make the NCAA tournament in 2020, right? So it never feels like, you know, having the whole roster turnover, getting rid of assistant coaches is the right move. But again, I just don't know what's going on with the program. Like, maybe guys just are not getting along. Maybe it's just not the right chemistry. And maybe Matt McCall thinks, heck, the only way to save my career is to start over, you know, get a bunch of new freshmen in here, start a new, yeah, new culture, and just try to build from day one and hope that, you know, in year four, he's able to get back to the big dance or something.
The assistant coaches thing is just the strangest.
Yeah.
Like, if you watch that team, I think we said on the pod before the A-10 tournament started that team just had this kind of like just end the season look to them, you know? So I don't think them flaming out in the A-10 tournament. I don't think the transfers are really a surprise at all, but a firing, like cleaning house with the assistant coaches, that just reeks of desperation.
Right.
And I don't know if McCall felt like he was legitimately on the hot seat unless he made a decisive move. But, yeah, I mean, people were looking at this to be the year,
right,
at UMass. I think a lot of, you know, UMass was picked, like, eighth in the A-10, to be fair. But, like, you know, our exposure to the UMass fan base, a lot of their fans on Twitter who were, like, if you had a top four that didn't have UMass in it, you would get a lot of tweets,
right,
back at you saying, hey, you forgot about UMass. So I think that was, like, the just the expectations for this year versus how they actually ended the season as the second worst team in the A-10. It was just kind of incredible. And again, end of year one, totally understandable. End of year two, it's like, what the hell is going on here? And are we actually anywhere close to the direction that we thought we
were?
Sure.
Yeah, it's tough. And that's going to be interesting to see, like, if anything more comes out about this. You know, I can't imagine what these three assistant coaches are going to be fired and everyone's going to move on and be like, oh yeah, nothing to see here, right? Like, I wonder if there was, yeah, some more to that story that we will eventually learn. But again, that's just me spitballing.
Yeah.
Who knows? It sucks,
yeah,
though. It's a tail dive for the program. Again, UMass has to start over. Maybe Fordham beats out UMass in the standings next year, but it's not going to be a pretty season for the Minutemen.
Yeah, and it was Kieran Hayward and Unique McLean,
okay,
are the other two. So Kieran Hayward, Unique McLean, Lawan Pipkins, and Curtis Cobb.
Oof.
Leaving the program. They graduate
Rashawn Holloway, yep,
and Jerry Baptiste, which means next year they're bringing back, I think, Carl Pierre, Samba Diallo, Trey Wood. So there's still some talent coming,
sure,
back. I don't necessarily think that weirdly, the transfers and the graduations, I don't think, are the big problem. The big, you know, red flag. The big red flag is the assistant coaches.
It's also like
just don't see it.
Day four since the season ended. So God knows if anybody else is going to transfer. I hate to say it, but I can't,
yeah,
imagine we don't,
true,
see one more guy leaving.
And one other thing that was weird. Sorry, I know we got to wrap up, but like apparently people in the UMass program have known that Luan Pipkins is going to transfer for a while.
Huh.
And so then, to me, that just kind of begs the question, like, how, in that, if that's the case, like, why was he playing so much at the end of the year? You know,
yeah.
why was he still, like, if a guy's going to leave your program, like, what's the right way to handle that? You know, why is he still getting minutes? And again, I'm not saying like I know the right answer to that thing, but you got to kind of wonder what message it sends to the other guys on the court. If your guy who is definitely not committed to the program is already thinking about what else he's going to do, is still, you know, still getting minutes there. And I guess he didn't, for the most part, he only played three games. He played three games after February 2nd, and his minutes were sparing. So maybe I'm overstating that a little bit. But I do wonder, you know, at what point they found out he was going to transfer. Did that have to do with all the DNPs? Did that affect the locker room when he's still, everybody knows he's going to transfer, but he's still getting into games? You know, I just have so many questions that we're never going to have answers for.
I think the answer is play like Cartier Gordon. Leave the program when you want, you know? And I think about that. I mean, that was good for St. Louis. It seemed to be seriously an addition by subtraction. Now the Billikens are the NCAA tournament. Mm-hmm. Any closing thoughts on this week's games, Petey?
Closing thoughts on this week's pod is we did it again. We promised ourselves we were going to record a 45-minute pod.
We got 7 seconds.
We're 5 seconds away from hitting
man.
An hour. So
right.
not under an hour once again. No, I mean, I think the weird thing about being an A-10 basketball fan is, like, you get all hyped up for the at-large bids. You get all hyped up to see who's going to represent the conference in the tournament. And then, you know, it's over pretty quickly because the Sweet 16, I mean, the Sweet 16 is going to be here on, after Sunday,
yeah.
Basically. So if you don't have a team in the Sweet 16, then your college basketball season's over.
Petey, I don't care. This is my favorite weekend of the year. I don't like the Final Four as much as I like the first two rounds. I will live and bask in my Thursday, Friday games no matter what happens. I don't care if VCU and St. Louis get killed. I'm going to love every moment. It's going to be a fun time.
Best sporting event in the world, for sure.
You are damn right about that.
Yeah. Grant, good luck this weekend. Thanks for coming. And everyone else, thank you for listening. Good luck with your brackets. Good luck with whatever gambling you're doing. Hope everybody wins big. And we will see you at some point with some off-season content.
Awesome. Thank you, Petey.
Oh, since I was young, been grooving to my own drum. Ain't that many teachers show me my potential. Felt like a failure, mama said you know better. Future in my hands, God, she had a plan. Stronger than I know, soon I'd understand. The power I possess, the story of the chosen. Oh, since I was young, been grooving to my own drum. Ain't that many teachers show me my potential. Felt like a failure, mama said you know better. Future in my hands, God, she had a plan. Stronger than I know, soon I'd understand. The power I possess, the story of the chosen. Mm.